The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. We are really fortunate this week. Joining us is Rita Glavin. Rita is a nationally recognized attorney in white-collar defense and much more than that. She is a lawyer's lawyer. She specializes in government investigations, and she represents individuals and companies in sensitive and high-profile investigations, trials, and internal investigations. In other words, if you get into real trouble, she's the one you want right now. Most recently, she's been representing former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Before entering private practice, Rita Glavin spent almost 12 years as a federal prosecutor with the U.S. Department of Justice, including working as an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York for 7 years and serving as the head of DOJ's criminal division in 2009, where she supervised more than 400 attorneys. That's a lot. As a prosecutor, she handled and supervised hundreds of criminal matters. Welcome, Rita Glavin. We're so happy to have you here.
So happy to be here, Alan.
Okay, so listen, I know that you're from the Capital District. I know you know the players. How did it come to be that Andrew Cuomo reached out to you? And if the recent filing is correct about how much money he paid you, one has to assume that you were a wealthy woman, but you're even more wealthy now.
Well, let me answer your first question first. With respect to the governor and how we came to work together, he and I have mutual friends in common who are lawyers, and they recommended me to him. And I got to tell you, Alan, I spent 2 days with him very, very early on, right after he called me. And I knew that I absolutely was going to take on this representation because I've been doing this a long time, but and I can tell when people are telling the truth, when they're not telling the truth, when there's something awry. And I knew that what was happening to the governor way back in March wasn't right, and that he did not sexually harass anyone. And I feel passionate about that, and I feel passionate about him as a client. And I absolutely was going to take this case. As to the status, my financial status, as my mother has always told me, we don't talk about that.
That's funny. Okay. So almost a year ago, Cuomo said he would abide by the findings of the Attorney General's investigation into the claims against him, but he started raising doubts about that even before it was released. And so the question is, why did he change his mind on the Attorney General's report?
Sure. The first is that because the Attorney General violated the terms of her referral. The governor did not authorize the Attorney General to conduct the investigation or participate in the investigation of him. Back in March of last year, the leaders of the Senate and the Assembly said he was going to have to make a referral or they would impeach him. And the governor knew that he was running for a fourth term. And what he also knew is that the Attorney General, Letitia James, was refusing to say she wouldn't run against him for governor. Of course, we now know she planned to do that because she did run, albeit for only 5 weeks. So what the governor did is the referral to the Attorney General's office made clear that it was not to be the AG that did this investigation, but that she was to appoint an independent law firm to conduct the review of the allegations. The referral was violated in two different ways. It was violated on day one when the Attorney General did not appoint an independent investigator. She appointed a plaintiff's attorney who specializes in cases of bringing sexual harassment against employers. And there's no way that a plaintiff's attorney was not going to find sexual harassment here because that would have been quoted back to her in every single, you know, case going forward. The second person she appointed was former U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of New York, June Kim, who, as we know, it's been very public, supervised investigations of the executive chamber and the governor for 6 years, investigations for which, you know, the governor had done nothing wrong. But the U.S. Attorney's Office under his supervision did these investigations, including that Mr. Kim personally interviewed the governor. So starting off the bat, you don't have independent investigators. You have investigators that have a bias and a history and a bent. And that was a violation of the referral. And we now know from public statements that Letitia James has made, including, you know, putting her name on the report, holding a press conference, but public statements she made to the Ulster County Democrats, that she made to the Long Island Association, that this was her investigation, that she did this investigation. And she absolutely was not to do that precisely because the governor felt she had an obvious political conflict, which turned out to be true, because just a matter of weeks after this report, where the governor was forced to resign because the majority of the assembly said they were going to vote to impeach him before the assembly even reviewed the evidence in the case, we now know what was going on here. This was a report meant to clear the decks. And then third, we've now proven the report is not accurate. We've done it over and over again. I did it even before I got a little sliver of the evidence that the Attorney General refused to give me, you know, by various submissions and public statements. But the report got things wrong, and the Attorney General won't correct it. She won't even acknowledge it or ask a substantive question about it. The governor didn't sexually harass a single woman. And if people come forward with civil claims, you will vigorously defend them. I'm doubtful that a number of them will. Because I don't think they'd even survive a motion to dismiss. We've now gotten evidence from, because of Sheriff Apple bringing that charge, the Attorney General had to part with some of the evidence that she didn't want, you know, to give to me, despite three written requests for it. And we were able to see that the Attorney General suppressed evidence that undermined the credibility of some of these complainants and certainly the conclusions in her report. And she didn't want the world to know about it.
You are a woman, of course. Was it necessary in order for Andrew Cuomo to proceed legally, and you've come up with a remarkable result, there's no question about that, that a woman was representing him?
Well, first of all, you know, my coming up with a remarkable result, no. It was the right result. And I would like to think that any attorney would have come up with the right result. He's innocent. He did not break any laws, any federal or state laws. So that's first. Second, about me being a woman representing him, I don't think of myself as a female lawyer. I think of myself as a lawyer. Always have.
But you are a female lawyer, right? I mean, I don't want to get into contretemps with you here, but you are.
Last time I checked, Alan, yes. I think so.
you do have a mirror. And so it's worked out rather well. Has it worked out better than even he expected it to?
The governor, as he always says, and he says to me now, the truth wins. The truth will always come out. And he expected that the truth would come out. You see what happened when the Attorney General had the press conference on August 3rd about the report that her name is on the front page of? What she wanted to do was to create a political stampede and to get everyone to say he had to resign and to say that he sexually harassed 11 women, and that wasn't true. Even if you take the truth, and we don't, but if you take the truth of most of the allegations, they're not sexual. It's not sexual harassment. Petty slights and trivial inconveniences are not sexual harassment.
Would you make that distinction?
Sure.
That's very important. So in other words, if I meet you for the first time, and this is a terrible thing to say, but I'm going to say it, and put my hand on your face, is that sexual harassment?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Sexual harassment is it's funny because what the Attorney General reports does is they blend and they blur it. And that was done on purpose. So sexual harassment is gender-based conduct, gender-based comments that result in you having inferior terms, conditions, or privileges of employment. So a petty slight or a trivial inconvenience, you know, a hug, putting a hand around a shoulder, a kiss on the cheek, you might argue that that's not appropriate. but it's not sexual harassment, not under state or federal laws. Absolutely not. And most of what is in this report doesn't even come close. Yet and I want to add this, Alan. When the Attorney General started this investigation, they had, you know, a website and a hotline. So anybody and everybody could call up and say, I've got a complaint of sexual harassment against Governor Cuomo. They were actively soliciting complaints. And look at this, and it's like, this is what you came up with? A doctor, the governor said to a doctor, you make that gown look good. Anna Liss, a woman who worked with him 6 years ago, upset because she claims he called her sweetheart, and a picture that she had on her desk until March of last year, she felt there was something inappropriate about the governor's pose. No, that's not sexual harassment. But the governor, you know, was run out over people disagreeing. Well, you know, I don't like that conduct. And look, Alan, you've known Andrew Cuomo his whole political career, right? Indeed. He's been in the public eye for 40 years. He went through two Senate confirmations, background checks. And you hear lots of things about lots of people. One thing you didn't hear about Governor Cuomo till, you know, December of 2020 is that he sexually harassed women. There's a lot of things you might say, but you don't go that many decades in public life and not have whispers. Women talk. Women know these things. You know, you hear rumors. Look, when Bill Clinton ran for president, there were a lot of rumors about him and women. You never heard that about Andrew Cuomo. And the reason you didn't hear it about Andrew Cuomo is because he doesn't sexually harass women. Now, he might be a demanding boss, but he's demanding equally to men and women. Did he make comments to men and women about their appearance? You bet. Did he hug? Did he kiss men and women? You bet. What the Attorney General doesn't take into consideration her report, and I know from having now been able to see some of the evidence, because this day the Attorney General still won't give it to me, won't even let me look at it. And what I do know is that there were many people that were interviewed that said, yes, he, you know, talks to us, men and women, about our personal relationships. You know, do you have a boyfriend, a significant other, a girlfriend? People do talk about that in the office. And, you know, the times you can say something is appropriate, inappropriate, well, that's not impeachable. If it breaks the law, then that's another issue.
You have a lieutenant governor who has not been kind since she has taken over. Now, this is more of a political than a legal question, I have to say. She has not been kind to the governor. One gets the idea she's trying to separate herself out, move away, and all of the rest. But he continues, and I think to some degree you do, to address your fire to the Attorney General, Tish James.
Yep.
There's a question there somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to answer the question you didn't ask. The reason we keep raising this, and me in particular, I'm his lawyer. Justice has not been done. The governor is not going to let this go because he can't, any more than someone who's been wrongly accused and then in this case convicted in the media and convicted by an attorney general who wanted to run for his job is never going to let go. Because what happened here wasn't right. I'm passionate about it, as I said at the start of this, because you can't do what the Attorney General did, expect someone to be quiet and take it, and then not answer a single substantive question about this, which the Attorney General has not done, and not even let me look under the hood and kick the tires. Because every time I kick the tires on this report, another part of the car falls off. I mean, what's left is, you know, maybe a steering wheel at this point.
How about suing? Now, if these people are legally have made defamatory subjects, and that's your skill as an attorney, why not sue them?
I'll tell you this. The governor has asked me to look at all of his legal options, and I'm doing that right now. And I don't want to get ahead of myself. But this has been terribly, terribly frustrating. And, you know, I want to draw a contrast here between what the Attorney General did versus what was truly an independent investigation, what Bob Mueller did. Bob Mueller went up and testified before Congress in detail, answered substantive questions about the report, answered substantive questions about findings, potential shortcomings, omissions, the evidence. Letitia James won't do that. I tell you what, Alan, I would welcome anytime, any place, to meet with the Attorney General, because, you know, they wouldn't meet with me before the report came out to discuss the findings and what the evidence was, or to hear, you know, from us. And I would meet her any place, any time, to talk about the substance of this, ask her questions. She can ask me questions. We can have a healthy exchange. But all the Attorney General's office does every time I speak out about that and point out specifics, all they do is say that I'm full of conspiracy theories and claim that I am attacking the women. And first of all, these aren't conspiracy theories. It's the truth. And secondly, the Attorney General seems to be under the impression that when she says that, you know, all these women should be believed, that we're not allowed to look at the proof. You don't just sit down when facts are wrong, when findings are wrong. That's not attacking the women. That is giving someone their right to look at the proof and to raise questions.
So let me follow up on that. Why would all these women make it up?
They're not. We've never said that they were. I have no question in my mind that the governor made a poor joke to the doctor. It's not sexual harassment. I have no question in my mind that, you know, he kissed Anna Rook at a wedding, not sexual harassment. No question in my mind that the governor took that picture with Anna List. That picture does not evidence sexual harassment. The governor's never said all these women are lying. In fact, with Trooper One, what he explicitly said on August 10th, he apologized to her and said, like, if she said that these things happened, he has no doubt that they did. But she's talking about isolated incidents over the 3.5 years that she worked with him, and it simply isn't sexual harassment. Now, could you say he, you know, shouldn't have asked her if he could give her on the cheek, give her a kiss on the cheek, and then kiss her? Yeah, of course you can say that. And he has said publicly, and he said it back in March, and he said it again in August, apologizing and taking accountability by saying, look, you know, I understand now that I made some people feel uncomfortable and that they took these as inappropriate. And he absolutely took that to heart. But he's never said all of women 11 are lying. Two things, Alan. Number one, I wouldn't tell you anything, you know, that's attorney-client privilege. But the second thing I'll tell you, you've known him a long time.
Indeed.
Do you think that he didn't come up with that on his own and that he didn't mean it? I mean, he has been very sincere. He has been very sincere about this.
So why didn't, in your opinion, the governor think it was appropriate in the sort of Me Too era, which we're in now, to speak with a young female subordinate about a sex life, no matter what the context? Shouldn't he have been smarter than that?
I think he has certainly, he apologized to Miss Bennett, but I'll tell you what he said in his testimony, which this person, you know, the Attorney General did not include in her report, and redacted out of what was released to the public from his testimony. His conversations with Charlotte Bennett came as a result of Miss Bennett volunteering to him that the reason she wanted to come work for him was her work on sexual assault at Hamilton College. And then she proceeded to tell him about, you know, her history with sexual assault. The governor, that resonated very, very deeply with him. Because, as he has said, he has a close family member, that it was eerily similar what Miss Bennett was describing to him. And he had spent many, many hours with therapists dealing with it. And it was very recent to when Miss Bennett started talking to him about her own life. And because of that, he engaged with her and actually felt fatherly towards her. And, you know, we can sit back and play Monday morning quarterback, but the governor's intentions were pure. He wasn't interested in Miss Bennett's sex life, you know, for some purient reason. He was certainly not propositioning Miss Bennett. And, you know, what resonated with him was he thought in his mind he would not want his family member to be ignored, or if his family member had confided that to a boss that she trusted, that the boss then moved away from her and ignored her and didn't want to engage anymore. That was important to him. And people can have different views of, about that, but it certainly was coming from a place where he cared quite deeply. And I got to tell you, he was shocked that come this February, she goes on television and claims he was propositioning for sex. He did no such thing. And she's tweeted that. He never made any advance to her.
Does that leave her open to a lawsuit?
Look, I think, what's interesting about Miss Bennett is I don't think you can look at Miss Bennett without considering her history, which was certainly not mentioned by the Attorney General. And the Attorney General didn't ask Miss Bennett about it. But Miss Bennett had made an accusation against a fellow student at Hamilton College. She and three other women made an accusation against a male student accusing him of sexual misconduct, and it was a couple weeks before graduation. That student was removed from campus and couldn't graduate. After that, right after the decision to do that, Miss Bennett withdrew her claim against him. He sued Hamilton College, and in the lawsuit, he alleges that Miss Bennett falsely accused him and that she knew that her complaint was false, and that there was a recording she had of him in which she acknowledged that there was no sexual assault. That was what he alleged in his lawsuit. Hamilton settled it. And I think you have to consider that. I think there's a couple other things, too, about Miss Bennett that you have to consider is how she interpreted things. She told the governor's counsel that, the governor asked her who she was sleeping with. And the governor's counsel said, did he use those words? And she said, well, he asked me who I was hanging out with. She interpreted the governor saying, hey, who are you hanging out with, to be who are you sleeping with. And what's interesting also is that these discussions were happening during COVID, when there was a limited number of people in 2020 that were at the governor's office, and a number of staffers were staying at hotels away from their families. And he was expressing interest in people, wanted to make sure that they had friends and didn't have the isolation. So there was a lens through which Miss Bennett viewed things. And she took away one thing when the governor meant something entirely different.
Let me ask you this. You've been in the prosecutor's shoes. Will the Manhattan DA criminally prosecute former President Donald Trump? I'm asking you that. You know, everybody's waiting for Trump to be brought to the law of justice. At least I am. Let's put it that way. So what are you hearing?
Well, I can't comment on that for a whole host of reasons. I can't comment. I can't comment on it. But what I can tell you is I think it's important, for every citizen that if they are prosecuted or accused of something, you give them access to the evidence, which is something that didn't happen here, and that you make your decisions not based on, I'm certain Alvin Bragg is not going to be making decisions based on whether or not he wants to run for president. We know Letitia James wanted to run for governor.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Rita Glavin, and I sure hope we can get you back because this half hour has really flown. Okay,
I'm happy to come back, Alan, anytime. When I see an injustice, you're never going to hear me stop talking about it.
Tom Joad said that, too. Okay, there's been a lot of discussion about the U.S. Supreme Court being a political body. I've said it a number of times. Is it true?
Oh, man. Oof, it's a tough one. Look, what I'll say is this. I think it's important that they're not perceived as a political body. And unfortunately, what has happened over the last year, I think, has caused a number of people to perceive them as a political body, particularly the manner. I mean, think about the way that Mitch McConnell rushed through, a confirmation right before the election for a replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And then, he blocked Obama's nominee 10 months away, Merrick Garland. And when you do stuff like that, that hurts the credibility of the court. And I think people are worried about Roe v. Wade and whether, you know, stare decisis, which means that the Supreme Court adheres to precedent, goes out the window. So it's very important that people not perceive them as a political body. You know, as Joe Biden says, and I agree with him, our democracy is so fragile. What we have is the rule of law and people's faith in the system. If you lose faith in the Supreme Court, that's a big problem. And I'll tell you this, speaking of rule of law, and I'm going to pivot back to this again, there was no rule of law with respect to the Attorney General's report on the governor. She issues a report, proclaims there were violations of the law. There were not. The report doesn't even go through each of the 11 women. We've shown time and time again he didn't sexually harass not a single one of them. But there was no rule of law, and he was forced to resign because he was going to be impeached. And if he took it to trial, there would have been gridlock for months. And so the governor stepped down, and, you know, that type of behavior is what causes people to believe it's politics, because it was politics here.
Gratz, we're out of time. Our guest has been Rita Glavin, a nationally, and I do mean nationally, recognized attorney in white-collar defense and government investigations who represents individuals and companies in sensitive and high-profile investigations, trials and internal investigations. Most recently, she's been representing former Governor Andrew Cuomo. Rita Glavin, thanks so much for joining us on the Capital Connection. Believe me, we're having you back.
Can't wait to be back, Alan. It's terrific meeting you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org, or you can even schedule a podcast. Ask for program number 2203. And join us again next week at this same time for another Political Conversation with Alan Chartok. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.